again and welcome to I've Got a Beatles podcast. And we have a special show because today we're starting the first of an occasional series that we're going to call Apple Scruffs. And Chris, I know you're pretty excited about talking about some Apple bands and Apple groups.
Yeah. A lot of them I've completely ignored for my entire life. So it'll be good to dig into, you know, Jackie Lomax.
Yeah. Little Doris Troy. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I got Doris Troy played all the time.
Constantly.
At the Bragg home.
Yeah. So. And so if you're a younger Beatle fan or someone who doesn't know what we're talking about here, the Beatles record label, Apple, had more than just them on it. So they were somewhat of talent scouts and went out and found a bunch of other music acts and some odd other people to sign to their label. And so what we're going to do is talk about some of what we think are maybe the more interesting and more successful different Apple groups, and what better way to start with the most famous of the Apple Scruffs, that we'll call them here. That would be the group Badfinger.
Yeah, Badfinger having a bit of a resurgence. We'll talk about this a little more in detail later. Because of an appearance on the show Breaking Bad, very famously in the final episode of it. Now, I won't spoiler you the Breaking Bad ending if you haven't seen it, but the Badfinger song is used in at the end of that. And so there was a Rolling Stone article recently about just that appearance of the song Baby Blue has, like, jumped up Badfinger sales and Spotify streams something like 9,000%
from
where they were the week before that. So,
amazing. So
a lot of iTunes, the night that it played, sold 5,000 copies.
Wow.
Record. So
pretty powerful.
Yeah, well, pretty powerful.
And if you grew up listening to classic rock, or if you listen to classic rock, you hear a lot of their tunes, actually. They were pretty successful and had a bunch of singles that we still know and maybe get sick of because you hear them a lot, and that being one of them. So I don't know about you, but for me, when I saw it in the show, it was kind of like, oh, yeah, this is actually a pretty good tune. I forgot about it because I usually just sort of skip over it when I hear those Badfinger tunes. But I think it's worth going back and looking at their career, because it's very interesting and filled with ups and way downs, you know, in their history.
It's a very dark sort of Shakespearean kind of story in many ways. But we're going to play some of their songs. Of course, there are some Beatle connections.
Oh, yeah, a lot of them. Yeah.
But the band actually started out not as Badfinger.
That's right. They were called the Ivies, and they're an interesting ethnic makeup here, half Welsh and half Liverpudlian. So that certainly attracted the Beatles to them. And they actually had a little bit of a hit called Maybe Tomorrow, and that was recorded in 1968 at Trident Studios in London. And then shortly after is when the Beatles, or particularly Paul McCartney and Peter Asher, and Mal Evans, actually, all discovered this group and, posed them to the Beatles to sign.
The Ivies had been a sort of a very successful sort of like opening act for, they said they pretty much opened for everybody except for the Beatles and Stones.
Yeah.
They opened for like The Who, they opened for Pink Floyd, they opened for like all the popular bands, English bands at the time. But they were just kind of small fish. And then some of the recordings got to Paul McCartney, and he loved them. And Paul had a song that he had written for the Magic Christian,
which I know is one of your favorite all-time movies with Ringo in it. Didn't we talk about? I think over the last Christmas episode, we found out it was re-released on DVD or something. So
yeah,
this is your time to become reacquainted
right.
acquainted with.
I'm sure we'll do a Magic Christian podcast. So we won't dig into that.
No, not yet.
We don't want to spoil a Magic Christian thing. No. But this song, and I'm just going to go right in without even saying what it is. Here's the Paul McCartney demo version of it, and then it'll fade into the Badfinger version of it.
If you want it, here it is, come and get it. Make your mind up fast. If you want it anytime, I can give it, but you better hurry, cause it may not last. Did I hear you say that there must be a catch? Will you walk away from a fool and his money? Sonny, if you want it, here it is, come and get it, but you better hurry, cause it's going fast. You better hurry, cause it's going fast. Fool and his money. Sonny, if you...
Well, that's, yes, Come and Get It. Paul McCartney penned song, which I believe he wrote and recorded in under an hour, and it really sounds like a tossed-off song. True confessions, I've never really liked this song. I don't think there's much to it, but it was a hit for Badfinger, and they were allowed to record it under the stipulation from Paul that they keep it almost exactly the same. They were asking if they could change the vocal a little bit, and he said no. You got to record it this way, and that's why it's almost indistinguishable, the two versions. But I don't know. What do you think of "Come and Get It"?
I probably like "Come and Get It" a little more than you do. I think it's pretty catchy. Fooling is money, honey. It was a hit for Badfinger for sure. Like, it was top 10 in the U.S. and it hit number 4. In England, so it immediately was, a success for them, and they made an album not quite as successful called Magic Christian Music. I guess the not very successful Magic Christian had to do with the not so success of the album, but still pretty good. I mean, they had to be feeling great.
Yeah,
to go from obscurity to all of a sudden having a hit. But shortly after the recording of that song, there were some personnel changes sort of demanded by the record label. And also the group, initially called the Ivies. There was some confusion between the Ivies and another music thing called the Ivy League at the same time in England, so they did want to change the name for legitimate reasons, but their name was changed for Badfinger, so it seems like they were kind of like the beginning of the Beatles.
Yeah, very similar.
You gotta get rid of this drummer, we gotta get another drummer in here. It was similar to that with the keyboardist that was changed out.
Yeah, that's very true, and not only were they recording, they're starting to record songs and be a real band, but they actually did right before their next single, which we're going to discuss in a moment. They had made some appearances with Beatles, and for example, they appeared on George Harrison's All Things Must Pass album, playing acoustic guitar. We'll get into a couple other appearances. They appeared on stage with George and did something with John I'll tell you about shortly, but I think it all leads up to this next song, which is, I think, maybe one of my favorite Badfinger tunes, one of their big, it wasn't really a big hit to begin with, but then it became one, and that was recorded on May 13th, 1970 at Abbey Road Studios for their album No Dice.
It's called No Matter What.
You are, I will always be
So, thoughts about No Matter What?
I think it's a terrific song. I think what I like about it is the changes are really good.
Yeah.
There's a great guitar solo in it. It's just like, it's a great catchy song, and it also kind of, I think all of their songs would have this sort of sadness to them, even though they're upbeat songs.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, this is sort of like a like a happy breakup song in a way. Like,
good way to look at it.
I will always be with you, goodbye, kind of thing.
No matter what, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, I like it. So what do you think about
it? Yeah, I think it's a great song. It's a real guitar song, written in the key of A. It just plays itself almost. If you pick up, try to play this on the guitar, it's really easy to play. It fits right under the fingers. And I love the bridge, which is really McCartney-like, very Beatles-influenced, with the high background vocals, sounds just like Paul. I'm a big fan of this tune, and they're kind of a weird group in some ways. It's hard to describe them. They're not psychedelic. They're not real heavy metal. Like, I'm think of things that were going on, like Led Zeppelin and stuff at the same time. They don't really fit into the Black Sabbath, Led Zeppelin, hard stuff. It's just sort of like straight-ahead rock and roll. I don't know.
Well, and I think there might have been some confusion about them, too, because they had such early success. These two songs were big hits that charted, so it was like, are they a pop hit group? Are they sort of like a rock pop group, or are they a rock group? I think some people don't like them because they consider them a pop group, and I think they're more, I think they're just fantastic songwriters, you know. I do want to say the leaders of this group, the two guys, Pete Ham and Tom Evans, sort of co-wrote some of the songs, and Ham was really kind of the leader from the start of the Ivies, but at some point Tom Evans come in, and then they had a real partnership, like a real friendship, a real partnership, wrote a lot of the stuff together. That song Pete Ham sings the lead on, the other one we heard was Tom Evans. Mm-hmm. The one we're about to hear is a total partnership.
Yeah.
Big, big, huge, successful, one might call it a standard, even, song, and that's a song called Without You, which has come up in our podcast before.
That's right. You know, this is an interesting one, too. I'm thinking of Beatle parallels that you've pointed out a couple here. This song is one that was cobbled together from two different songs. So this was not conceived as one linear song. And so, again, it brings up a lot of Lennon-McCartney tunes where one would have a fragment and then one would fill in the rest. Think of Day in the Life or things like that. So this one, and it kind of sounds like it a little bit, but it works well together. And it is a Tom Evans-Pete Ham tune recorded in July of 1970. And what we're going to do, you probably know the song in its famous version, which we'll play in a second, but it's also important to listen to the original Badfinger version to see what it started out as. So let's listen to a bit of Without You by Badfinger from the album No Dice.
Forget this evening and your face when you were leaving, but I guess that's just the way the story goes. You always smile, but in your eyes your sorrow shows. Yes, it shows. Well, I can't forget tomorrow. When I think of all my sorrow, I had you there, then I let you go. And now it's only fair that I should let you know what you should know. Without you.
Well, I can't forget this evening, or your face as you were leaving. But I guess that's just the way the story goes. You always smile, but in your eyes.
Yeah, so back-to-back versions of Without You from Badfinger, and then the more famous version by Harry Nilsson.
Well, Harry Nilsson was recording it basically in the same studio or in the next door studio to Badfinger and was like, hey guys, come over and listen. I'm recording your song. And they're like, what? And they come over and apparently Badfinger just blown away by, you know, Harry Nilsson, particularly the vocals of Harry Nilsson's during singing during the chorus. You know, it's like outstanding. Oh, yeah. I did want to say about the lyrics, though. I mean, I never really realized, you know, I've heard this song a million times, but Evans had written the chorus, but Ham had written this lyric for the verse, and he was, Evans and him were, like, Ham was about to leave with his girlfriend, and Evans was like, hey, come on, I got this song I want you to hear, and he could tell that his girlfriend was upset, but she kept saying, like, no, it's okay. You can stick around. And he said, you have a smile, but in your eyes I can see you're sad.
Oh.
And then he thought about it just like immediately was like, I gotta go in. he wrote this lyric.
Yeah.
You always smile, but in your eyes sorrow shows.
Ah.
And, there's a documentary that I watched about this, which you could watch on YouTube. It's called They Sold a Million. It's a Badfinger BBC documentary from BBC Wales. And it has interviews with her, with he was not married to any of these women, but his another woman that he had a daughter with, sort of remembering what he was like and some stuff. And I found that story very touching because every time she hears this song, which, you know, has been covered 100 times by Mariah Carey and Andy Williams and other people, you know, it's very moving to her because she's like, ah, it's me that they're talking about. So,
wow. Yeah. That's a great story and a great ballad. Really, very much of its time, and the Harry Nilsson version is certainly a classic with his vocals. So then they started to have a little more success, and that was, of course, that actually wasn't a hit for them. It was the Nilsson version that made it famous. And so then the next hit that they had happened around June of 71. June of 71, they were recording another album with a couple of other star people, including a Beatle. And so the next tune was when we started the podcast with today, and we'll get a little bit more into it on a second listen here, but that would be the tune Day After Day, which has the stamp of George Harrison all over it.
Yeah, they recorded their third album straight up. I guess it wasn't going so hot, and studio didn't really like what was happening. So George Harrison was like, you know what, I'll go in and help out with some of the production. So he came in, helped out with some of the production, and on this particular song, he plays slide guitar. He and one of the band members play like a doubled slide guitar.
Yeah, so Tom Evans, I think. Yep.
Listen for that. We'll jump to a little bit further in the song and hear some more Day After Day.
Bring it home, baby.
Wow, that is really... You don't even have to listen to the vocals. You know who produces and who plays on that tune. Do you think it almost sounds like an outtake of All Things Must Pass? Or could have been on All Things Must Pass? It's around a little bit after that time.
Totally, it's right in that era.
Yeah.
In fact, Harrison couldn't finish the recording it, or the producing of the album, because he had a big project he had to go do, which was a concert for Bangladesh. So, which we'll bring up here again in a second.
Yeah.
So he left finishing Badfinger's album and turned it over to another kind of famous guy, Todd Rundgren. And Todd Rundgren took over and kind of finished up the thing and turned it into a good album. It was a top 40 album. Day After Day was a hit on the charts, both in the U.S. and the U.K. And then Badfinger joined George Harrison for the concert for Bangladesh. And if you see the concert for Bangladesh, they're the backing band.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that he introduces everybody individually, and then he's like, back there's Badfinger.
Yeah, there's an Apple band, Badfinger, or something like
that. Yeah, they're just standing there, like, real close together, kind of like, hey.
Yeah, and actually in that, the concert for Bangladesh, the famous version of Here Comes the Sun was done by George and Pete Ham, who supposedly didn't even know the tune very well, so he was learning it on the plane over to New York, figuring out how to play Here Comes the Sun, which, if you're a guitar player, you know is not an easy song to play. But sounds great in the actual performance. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of Day After Day. I think it's a great tune. It's catchy. I like the piano, little piano riffs on there. And then, of course, the slide guitar is vintage George on there.
So, now this is where the Badfinger story starts getting a little bit strange. Another song from Straight Up is this song, which we were bringing up before, which appeared in the last episode of Breaking Bad, called Baby Blue. Maybe not even that well known, more obscure Badfinger hit, but as the years have gone on, it's gotten more and more popular. Probably never more popular than it is this year. So let's hear a little of Baby Blue. I want to hear what you think of this song.
It's hard for me to not picture the last episode of Breaking Bad after hearing that, which, if you haven't seen it, it'll all make sense when you do.
Yeah.
But apart from, you know, before Breaking Bad itself, that has, you can really tell that's not George Harrison's production. It really sounds like a Todd Rundgren tune, and I'm thinking a lot of Todd Rundgren because I see his picture all over outside my house. There's a billboard, and it says, "An unpredictable evening with Todd Rundgren coming soon." So he's, I don't know what that means. But I'm looking at him every time I drive to work. So anyway, it's a pretty good tune. I like the different parts. It has some intricate guitar work in there, which is a trademark of Rundgren's tunes. And pretty catchy melody. I like when it gets rocking.
I think, too, there's this, what I spoke of before, this sort of, like, tragic kind of, like, feeling to it of, like, guess I got what I deserve.
Yeah.
I think it's a song about being broken up with more than anything else and kind of, like, you know, I'll remember those baby blue eyes.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
And in the Breaking Bad world, Vince Gilligan, you know, was like, oh, this would be perfect because of the one of the, you know, if anyone who's seen any of Breaking Bad knows, there's a blue crystal meth going around.
Yeah.
They also use the song Crystal Blue Persuasion.
Yes, that's a good one, too.
in the series, which is a good use of that. But it really, like, was a good wrap-up song for that show. And Baby Blue also made an appearance in The Departed, the Martin Scorsese 2006 film. If you've seen that, then you'd know where that fits in, too. So, never actually released as a single in the UK.
Interesting.
But, you know, as time goes on, it's, you know, definitely a big thing. Now, the next album that they did...
If I could jump in first, just before we get to their what happened next, a couple other Beatle connections. We mentioned they're all... that they had associations with all four Beatles. So we've talked about Paul and George a lot. They also played on It Don't Come Easy, Ringo's tune. And then also, there's been some debate about whether they actually played on the John Lennon album Imagine, which was also around the same time. One of the members said, oh, I don't think it made it on the album, but then other people swear they did. So in any case, they were everywhere in the year 71. That was the same year that we had Day After Day and Baby Blue. So
now, here's where the Badfinger story gets a little strange. They made another album for Apple Records that was released through Apple Records. The name of the album is called Ass.
Yeah.
So take that for what you want.
Yeah.
But Apple Records, as we know, wasn't really a great business and wasn't going too hot over at Apple Records.
No.
So they recorded this album, but to sort of fulfill their contract, but the manager of the group basically was like, this is the last one we're going to do with Apple. We're going to move on and get another record deal in America, and you'll be a huge success. Which Pete Ham was very like loyal person, and didn't really like this, and it upset him. He had very very mixed feelings about leaving Apple. So he wrote a song that's actually on the album. So bizarre. So wrote a song actually on the album that's basically a sweet goodbye to Apple Records, mm-hmm. called Apple of My Eye. And I thought we'd play this song, even though it's not, and it was released as a single. So let's play Badfinger's Apple of My Eye.
Oh, I'm sorry, but it's time to move away. Though inside my heart, I really want to stay. Believe the love we have is so sincere. You know the gift you have will always be. You're the apple of my eye. You're the apple of my heart. But now the time has come to part.
Interesting.
It's a weird song, way to go out.
Yeah, I know. There's so many parallels here to the Beatles, because the Beatles, of course, a couple of years later were trying to get rid of Apple and had to fulfill contract obligations. So they were also just getting albums out, and they also had a manager who was a little controversial in Alan Klein, and then Badfinger had their own controversial manager, which I think you'll pick up the story now with he's involved in some of the bad stuff that happened next.
Well, they had a manager, Stan Polley. They actually had sort of two managers. They had like a manager that was their British manager that was sort of this, you know, the classic cigar smoking manager that's like, yeah, I'm gonna, you know, kind of like Alan Klein, like, yeah, I'm gonna,
yeah.
You guys will be a big success. Well, he set up this whole deal with this American guy, Holly, and he was supposed to, and it was through Warner Brothers. And so they signed a contract with Warner Brothers. And he was like, I'll set up these accounts for you, and that'll make you big, huge success, but and money financially, and you'll get all this advance money. But we have to put them in all these separate accounts and all this stuff. Basically, screwing them from the start.
Yeah,
they don't know anything about it. They basically never got any money from most of their music ever, including, you know, they wrote this song Without You that's a huge mega hit by recorded by many, many people. So it started to be, and along with that, they started making these records for Warner Brothers that just were not successful and were really bad, really did not do well at all. So the group over the next year or so just kind of fizzled out. They recorded a couple things and released them, but they fizzled out and things got really bad, and they weren't making any money at all. And then the guy who took it the worst was Ham, who felt like he's the leader and he's letting everybody down. He basically was blaming himself for all of it. And in April 1975, he received a phone call from the U.S. saying, basically, all the money's gone. And he was just distraught, and he went drinking with Tom Evans, and they went drinking, and he apparently drank 10 whiskeys.
Whoa.
that's a lot of whiskeys. And then went home that morning at about 3 o'clock and told Evans, I've got a plan. I'm going to take care of all this. But his plan was to hang himself in his garage. Well, he wrote a suicide note too. And the suicide note says, Anne, I love you. Blair, I love you. I will not be allowed to love and trust everybody. This is better.
Ooh.
Pete. And says, P.S., Stan Pauly is a soulless bastard. I will take him with me. So just at the end, like, very bitter towards Stan Pauly, and it's just a horrible tragedy. Yeah. And the guy Ham is such a great song. I mean, he wrote one of the greatest songs of all time. Let's face it. You know, co-wrote it. He wrote some of the other great songs. Was a very talented guitarist, very talented singer.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. And that, unfortunately, that wasn't the end of the tragedy, because then a few years later, they carried on and tried to continue, but it didn't really work too well without Pete Ham. So then a few years later, in November of 1983, Tom Evans met the same fate and also committed suicide, basically
via hanging.
Via hanging, and said that he, without Pete, he couldn't really go on and wasn't really worth continuing anything. And they'd been screwed over so badly that it just wasn't worth it. So,
and the day of his suicide, he was having a heated argument on the phone about royalties from Badfinger songs. So it's, you know, the group got so screwed money-wise, and it's just a real sad thing, because it's like a very talented, very good group. I think they made a lot of good music, and, you know, probably more of a good music in a best of variety. If you take their 5 or 6 albums, there's probably about 10 great songs, and maybe some others worth noting that we hadn't talked about. But overall, kind of definitely a sad story.
Yeah, it is. I wonder if, as we wrap things up here in our look at Badfinger, I wonder if their intimate connections with the Beatles was that a hindrance or a help, or some of both? Maybe some of both. That's the way to look at it. Obviously, they wouldn't have gotten to where they were without the Beatles' help, but it may have caused some problems in the end. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a case of, you know, probably if you're like, who's to blame for all of this, it's probably the focus is more on the manager. And maybe the way that Apple Records was sort of discombobulated and run poorly didn't really help this group that much. Helped them a little bit to have some early success, but could have maybe helped them by getting them a better manager and stuff like that. But look at what they were doing. They were hiring Al Klein and doing making foolish decisions left and right at the time. So you know, hard to blame anybody. And in the end, you know, what can he say about somebody who takes his own life? You know, it's a sad thing, but, you know, we've all got to keep living.
Yeah.
You know, maybe if Ham and Evans hadn't killed themselves, they'd be making music today still.
Well, the one surviving, well, there are multiple surviving members, but the main one, Joey Molland, he has continued having a music career to some extent, and he's a regular at Beatles conventions and still keeps the flame alive for Badfinger. So, and I think he was interviewed after the Breaking Bad use of the song, and he was ecstatic. I mean, he's like, "Oh, this is great! Wow!" Well, of course, it's good for him now. He'll probably get more money, but still, it was. He said, "Well, it's nice to get some recognition finally and have some success." So, interesting story. I mean, this is a classic case of another rock and roll band with a lot of promise that had some real big highs and then was just really deflated by business and bad decisions and personnel problems and all of that. Just how many cases in rock history are there of this sort of similar thing of, you know, somebody who's at the peak and then they just, you know, something happened, Jimi Hendrix or Janis Joplin or any of these people, they just, Sid Barrett, you know, they're all on their way up or have a lot of success and then just can't maintain it for business reasons or personal reasons. So pretty fascinating group, though, and a lot of good tunes still, to like we said.
Maybe someday they'll make a really fantastic biopic about the
whole situation. I think you could. Yeah.
I think it'd be a great thing. But I would suggest that documentary. Just if you just type Badfinger documentary into YouTube, you'll be able to find it. It was pretty fascinating and had interviews with one of the keyboardists that was let go, like right, who actually played on Come and Get It and was let go like right after. He's like, "I'm walking to work. I have to get up to bike to work or whatever at 3 a.m. and I'm hearing my song on the radio." Oh. It's like, man, I'm not in the band anymore.
That
so,
hurts. Wow.
pretty rough stories all around.
Yes, definitely.
But they did, you know, as we know, they made a lot of classic songs, including all-time classic. So we'll go out I like to surprise Dave sometimes with the go outs.
I have no idea what's coming here.
So. And it's going to be Without You Again from Dame Shirley Bassey's version. Ooh. Of it. So let's hear Dame Shirley Bassey with Without You.
Well, I can't forget this evening and your face when you were leaving, but I guess that's just the way story goes. You always smile, but in your eyes the sorrow shows. Yes, it shows. No, I can't forget tomorrow. When I think about my sorrow, I had you there. Let you know, but you should know.